There was the death of a young person in the state of Texas, and the response was overwhelming by our legislators to make sure that our schools are aware of the impact of bullying, because this suicide was the result of bullying, and to know how to deal and prevent suicide in the public schools. The third part of our presentation, it concerns anger management, because children respond with anger when they are distressed. Unlike, they don't go in and say, gee, I'm really sad today. They are angry. This was brought to our attention by our senator, Dr. Dole, and that this was needed for our schools. So we have volunteered to provide this service for the public schools in our area.
Okay. Well, before we talk about suicide prevention, let's give our listeners a better understanding of how often this occurs, what age group, some of the believed reasons why. Do you have some stats to share with us?
Suicide is the third most common cause of death in youth between the ages of 14 and 22, and eighth most common cause of death in youth ages 5 to 14. It's a third cause of death. That's something we really need to look at. Probably it would be higher in the younger children, except they do not have access to the means to harm themselves as much. We know that there are worldwide trends of increase in depression. We're not sure why. There have been lots of studies, but we know that this is going to be more and more of a problem. You combine that with the increase in bullying and the types of bullying that occur now, and we find both to be a major problem.
There's going to be a lot of warning signs that you're able to present, not only to the students, but maybe to some parents. What are some of the key ones that you like to address with these individuals?
It's amazing how we can miss the warning signs for suicide and for depression. Nobody wants to think that a child could be so upset that they could actually harm themselves. But one of the main things is anger. A child who is distressed will present with an angry front. They will isolate themselves from family and friends. They no longer participate in things that they used to. One thing that we tell family and faculty that work with children, if they start giving away personal possessions, things that they hold dear and they're giving them away, that's a good sign that they're thinking about the end of their life.
In your studies, what do you find to be more common, that parents, friends may not realize an individual is having these thoughts, or knowing something is wrong but not knowing how to deal with it?
There's both, and it's not just parents, it's not just faculty. Physicians miss. There was a study by Martha Brownlee Duffick in which she showed that physicians that were seeing regular patients missed 70% of the cases of depression. When people come in, they don't talk about that. They don't come in and say, I'm really sad. They say, I hurt here. So you have trained physicians who have been through learning that it's easy to miss. They're worried about what medications to give, how to treat the physical ailments. You look at that with faculty also. Look in the schools. They're worried with children not performing, children not doing well, children getting along. And they really don't stop and ask the questions sometimes. It's easy to miss. Families, the same thing. Nobody wants to think that their child could possibly hurt themselves. So I think there's a study that said that in parents, only 30% of the people who completed suicide did their families think that they could actually do that. They're afraid to ask. They don't know how to ask. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that we teach them. The first thing is to say, it looks like things have been really bad. And we ask them to just say, just start the conversation. How bad is it? Have things been that bad? And then the next thing you ask is, have you ever thought about hurting yourself? And you listen. The number one thing is to listen to the answer. If a person has said, well, yes, I've thought about hurting myself, you ask, are you thinking about that now? Is that something you're planning on? And listen, is it something that they've thought, yes, I'm thinking about doing that right now? The third thing you ask is, do you have a plan for how you would do that? if a person has a plan and they say, yes, I know where the gun is, or I know where the medication is, you have to be very, very concerned. There was a study that showed that 70% of college students at one time or another thought about ending their life, but we know that not that many people do. But if they have an intent and they say, yes, I've thought about doing it, and they have a plan, you have to take it very seriously, no matter what the age.
Speaking with Dr. Gail Johnson here at Texas A&M University, Commerce has been part of and will continue to be part of seminars to instruct people on suicide prevention, also in conjunction with Dr. Lavelle Hendricks, Understanding and Controlling Anger, and Dr. Betty Block and Dr. Tara Tejan-Smith on bullying. Is it possible that warning signs these days didn't mean the same thing 10 years ago, and that's maybe some of the challenges in trying to understand this, or maybe why parents are reluctant to come forward and ask their child, is this bothering you, for a different reason than I would think it would be?
Mm-hmm. I think that the depression rates are higher. When you have depression rates that are growing, that is an increased risk. We know that 5% of the people with depression will generally commit suicide and be successful. So that's an increasing problem. Additionally, the means, I think, are more available to our children. The number one way that children harm themselves is with guns. And that doesn't mean that's the method that's most commonly used to attempt suicide. It's the method that is most deadly. But medications are available. You find a lot more medications in the household now that can be fatal. There are even books, and this is a frightening thing to me. There are books that people can check out from the library that tell people how to commit suicide, and those usually have a backup method. As frightening as it would be that a child could get a hold of these, they are available. They say, for example, if you're going to take a medication to kill yourself, put a plastic bag over your head so that you have a backup method. You can look on the internet, you can look in these books, and there's a how-to.
Some things are beyond someone's control. I think that goes without saying in some circumstances, but there are a lot of things that it's understood the parents can control, the adults in the house can control, where they put that weapon, some of the medications. Mm-hmm. Is that still an issue of where they're putting some of those things? Are they not understanding that it's still available, that the child can get to those objects?
I don't think anybody wants to think that that's a potential possibility that their child could harm themselves. And I'm not sure what the rate is of having guns in the home, but it's not unusual in our communities. We live in an area where there's a lot of hunting. Mm-hmm. So the guns are there, the children grow up with them. We probably need to educate all of us. There have been cases where the child has gone to play at a neighbor's house and gotten a gun there. They're accessible, and that's something one parent would never dream, that another parent would leave a gun where a child could get it. But that has happened. And the youngest child I know of that has committed suicide with a gun was a 6-year-old.
If there is a suicide, what would be the proper way to handle the aftermath? We think about ways to prevent, but say mm-hmm. it has happened. There's been some instances locally where it has happened rather recently. How do you respond as an adult, as a friend, to someone that was impacted, that was closely impacted by that suicide?
One of the things we know is that one of the risk factors for suicide is knowing someone who committed suicide, or knowing of someone who committed suicide. A family member, a fellow classmate, someone in the community, that puts everybody at risk. You have to talk to everyone. You need to keep the lines of communication open. Parents need to talk to their children about how that's impacted them. In the schools, whenever there is a death by suicide, I think our schools know, and they have a good system of responding with counselors, school psychologists, but everybody needs to know, from the teachers, everybody. And I think we're doing a pretty good job of that. But the main thing is, we may not know which one is the one that was the most wounded by that suicide. It may not have been the best friend. It may have been someone who just saw that person from a distance.
we struggle, I think, with this decision in the media of if we should report on a suicide.
Mm-hmm.
What is your thought? What's the industry thought on that?
The thought is that it's going to be out there, but I don't think it should be glamorized or put forth as the front page story. But we live here in this area. We live in small communities, and people are going to know about it.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's reported as an accident. The reality will be that the person committed suicide. But one way of looking at suicides are they're all accidents. The things happen just as a young person driving a car on a wet street. If they'd been driving that car a little slower on a dry pavement, it wouldn't have happened. Those suicides, there's a series of events that have led to that person taking their own life. And we have to be careful how we tell others about it. We've got to be honest, but we don't have to promote it.
And also in your presentation, you'll be talking about confidentiality. What exactly will that entail?
When we're talking about confidentiality, we're talking about the faculty, the coaches, the people that are dealing with that child. How do you deal with it? How do you get the information to those people around them? If you know a child is at risk for suicide, who do you tell? And there are some pretty basic fundamental rules. First, you better tell the family. You call the family. As a mental health provider, the counselors and the school psychologists although we all want to try to protect the rights of someone with confidentiality, we have to let their family know they are at risk, and we call. And when you're dealing with a child under the age of 18, the family has the right to know exactly what's going on with that child. Also then, which teachers do you tell? Who do you let know that this child is at risk? And that's something that the team that's working with that child has to sit and consider their movements through the day. Obviously, if they're a grade school child and they're in a teacher's classroom, you need to let that teacher know that that child is at risk. But you need to look at PE teachers, coaches, what you tell, how much you share, and who you share it with. That's all confidentiality.
Okay. Well, we're approaching the summer months. Kids are out of class, and then you're going to be preparing to give more presentations in the mm-hmm. fall when they start back up in the semester.
Yes, this is the request of our legislature and are actually the mandate of our legislature to make sure that those people that interact with those children, such as the coaches, have the information they need. They care a great deal about those children, but they have to know how to interact. My first career was that of a speech and debate coach, and I used to load the kids in the van and take off for weekends. I knew those kids so much better than the ones I did in my classroom, and that's who you can impact the most. Every person, not just the counselor, not just the school psychologist, needs the information to intervene when they see there's a problem.